All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuckadelics? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. How you feeling? Everything okay? How'd that thing turn out? Yeah? Did you get the test back? It's good? Oh. All right, well, you just got to see what happens. Today on the show, Sissy Spacek is here. That's a lot of S's for me. As some of you know, I have a slight but barely noticeable lisp because I don't say my S's correctly, nor do I say my R's correctly. All right? That's why Guarana is very difficult for me. And thank you for the emails about how to pronounce Guarana. But it doesn't matter now. I'm not doing that today. That's not part of the show. But Sissy Spacek's a lot of S's. Sissy Spacek and Squarespace, a lot of S's today. And I think the more I don't want you to focus on it. But I'm excited to have her. It was a very pleasant talk. She's a very unique being, Sissy Spacek, one of the great actresses of her generation of all time, continues to be that. And she's unique. I mean, you saw Carrie. I mean, maybe you'll go see the old man and the Gun with Robert Redford, which is in theaters right now in select cities. But Sissy Spacek, Badlands, you saw that too. I mean, she's almost otherworldly, Sissy Spacek. So when she came in, it was she's very, very nice, very grounded person. She's from Texas. Texas. You ever driven across Texas? That's a long fucking day or two. Ooh. Yeah, because I once had to cut up from the Gulf all the way through to New Mexico, northern New Mexico. I went on the diagonal all the way through Texas. And you just sort of drive, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, is that a town? Hey, Eric, was that a town? Was that? It looked kind of like one. There was an old truck there and a place that had a door. It's just a lot of that, and then there are big cities. But a lot of like, oh, what's this? Is this store? Oh no, that store hasn't been opened in, wow, a long time. Jeez, how old's that tractor? Is that a town? Nope, it's not. I don't even know what that is. That's my impression of driving across Texas. Hey, look, some hills, kind of. Well, are we over them? Yep, that was it. Seems kind of dry. I remember I got pulled over in Texas, and the cop asked me what I was doing in Texas. I said I was doing comedy, and he just looked at me and laughed and let me go. How often does that happen? That was back in the day. Back in the day, people. So what is on my mind? Did the president text me? Yeah, I wonder how those presidential alerts are going to be popping up. This guy just cannot be in our fucking faces, up our asses, in our brains, in our ears enough. It's just the more he stays in the news, the more we got to see his face. I'm so tired of his face. And then his tweets. I don't follow him on Twitter. But now I guess he can just text everybody. Text things like, it's not safe to vote today. Yeah, wait for that text. Wow. I guess he was worried that not everyone was on Twitter. So, I mean, what do you give him? 2 weeks before the presidential alerts or just his shitty tweets? Man. Exciting as we slowly normalize the complete immersion into this Trump ego. Just like, yeah, that's kind of weird. Yeah, it is weird until the presidential alert. Hey, it'd really help out if some of my people could attack California. Wait, what? I live here. I guess that's not for us. That's a joke, right? Hey, what? Why do I hear trucks outside? Setting some scenes today. Update on the Joker. Don't know when I'm going to be shooting yet, but it's coming. It's coming. I know my lines. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to launch. This seats for tonight, Thursday and Saturday at Dynasty Typewriter here in LA are sold out. So that's nice. That's a good thing, right? I want to tell you this. Yesterday, I spoke to my old buddy, Ted Alexandro, for an upcoming WTF episode. I've known Ted a long time. He's a New York guy. He's a Queens guy. He's a solid guy. Very earnest, honest, funny dude. You might have seen the little viral thing that he did from the cellar about Louis and the culture we live in. But I never really had an opportunity to talk to him. He was on a live one a while back, but he's got a special coming out. It's called Senior Class of Earth. It's available today from All Things Comedy. You go to atcspecials.com to get it. And you can watch it. He's a very smart, very funny guy. We just couldn't sync it up to put his episode on today because this is basic as today. But go check him out. And that'll be up in a few weeks. It was a good comic talk. It was smart. We talked about purpose. That's what it is. What's your purpose? If it's not clear to most people, I can't take it. I can't. It's relentless what's going on. Brett Kavanaugh, jock douche, partisan hack, probably going to get confirmed. You know, I guess this is just my semi-weekly PSA. I hope the voting works, and I hope you do it. Presidential alert. I'm president for life. Go fuck yourselves. Winning. Oh, that was another lunatic. Believe me. Presidential alert. I've got a lot of things going on in my mind, and we just have to go on with our days, despite the fact that there is just this vibrating dread of a diminishing future hanging over us. Where's the hope? I got some hope. Maybe a nice email. Maybe a nice email would be nice, right? Wouldn't that be nice, a nice email? Here's one, subject line, please help. My dad really likes your podcast, won't shut up about it. How do I make him stop talking? Me and my mom suffer daily from this. Please respond. What? And then like the next day, again, same guy. By the way, he just bought merch, so it's getting worse. Hey, just be thankful, all right, that you have a dad that likes to talk about something, I imagine, relatively interesting. I'm not saying I'm interesting, but okay, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't think my father has listened to one of these, all right? So shut up. No, you know, say hi to your dad for me. Tell him I'm happy he's listening, and maybe you should start listening. How would that be? Maybe that would be good, and then you could talk to him about me and the guests I have. Yeah, try that. And also, it just reminded me, I like to take a moment to congratulate my friends Adam and Roxanne on the birth of their new son. They know who they are. I don't need to tell you who they are, but congratulations on Sunny Sweets. That's the name they chose, the two names. And I got to say, a couple good names. It's a couple of good names. That's great. Welcome, Sunny Sweets, to the world. So, Sissy Spacek, one of the great actresses. She's in a new film called The Old Man and the Gun with Robert Redford, which I saw. And a lot of great people in that movie, man. Tom Waits is in there. Danny Glover's in there. Ben Affleck's in there. Denzel's kid's in there. A lot of great people in the movie. And Sissy is one of them. She's also in a new Amazon dramatic series, Homecoming, with Julia Roberts. That premieres on November 2nd. And this is me somewhat nervously talking to Sissy Spacek. It was very comfortable, actually. She's a very sweet woman and a great actress. So enjoy the talk. You don't live here anymore, do you?
I don't live here anymore. We have a place out here.
Oh, you do?
Just so we don't have to stay in hotels.
Right. But most of the time you spend in the country?
And yeah, in Virginia or in Austin. That's where I'm from. That's all my family's there. So.
Right there in Austin?
Yeah.
Oh, because I thought, I noticed, this new film shot in Texas. I was wondering if it was sort of like, oh, I'm back in Texas.
Back at home.
Yeah.
I do feel like that. I have quite a lot of homes.
Yeah. But Texas.
I mean, I don't mean,
Yeah, houses.
Homes in my heart.
Yeah, yeah. But Texas, the original one.
That's the original one.
And is it, it's a completely, Austin's got to be completely different from when you were a kid. I mean, it's crazy.
It is. I actually grew up in Northeast Texas. And
Northeast.
It's a much more rural area,
yeah.
Farming area, kind of the piney woods.
Yeah. Oh, there's piney woods in northeastern Texas?
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful there. It's much it's where that whole mountain range, the Smoky Mountains,
right.
The Blue Ridge Mountains,
yeah.
the
They're all up there.
It starts there and then goes
right.
up. We just have little hills.
Right.
There,
I grew up in New Mexico, like in Albuquerque. So like, you know, down in south New Mexico, southern New Mexico, so it's like Texas. And you drive, I mean, I've driven down all the way across Texas. And those towns are just, they're just like four buildings on a highway.
I know.
And then
I
just
love it.
Miles of nothing. But I mean, they're farmland. You do love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love Texas.
Yeah. If that designed your consciousness, it's a lot of space up there, huh?
A lot of space.
Yeah.
A lot of space.
And what kind of family did you grow up in? Like, what was the business?
My father was an agriculturalist, soil and water conservationist.
Uh-huh. Did he work for the state?
He did.
Yeah.
And he worked with farmers and, you know,
yeah.
helped them with their crops. And
yeah, tried to make it
better. He would grow anything. He was, you know, just, he would bang on the door if he thought we were using too much water in the bathtub. And he would bang on the bathroom door.
He was way ahead of the curve on that.
Oh, man, he was way ahead of the curve.
On conservation of water.
Yeah.
Because it must have always been an issue there. Because it's pretty dry. It's pretty arid.
Well, it is, but I think that his belief was there's one air and there's one water and we need to protect it.
Yeah.
And soil conservation.
Sure.
Because there's, in, you know, he wanted people to become aware of protecting their
right.
land from soil erosion.
Right. And depleting it.
Yeah. So that's that. And my mother was precious and a homemaker.
Uh-huh. And was it like, did you live on a big chunk of property?
No, we lived in a little house in a little town.
In the town.
In a little tiny town, 1,000 people.
So he never had his own farm or anything?
He did, but that was earlier. He never had a farm that he worked. He had a cotton farm in West Texas, out in near Lubbock.
Uh-huh. And then
but that was
another life.
Know,
before
that
you? Another,
that was before me.
Yeah. He decided he's going to get out of that racket.
He was just a man of the land.
Yeah.
He appreciated the land.
So he always, like, just driving around. Do you have a truck?
No, he didn't have a truck.
No truck.
My father's family was Czech.
He's like first generation American?
No. My great-grandfather was, his grandfather was...
They came over from Czechoslovakia?
Yeah, they came over from... Actually, it was Moravia. It was before Moravia, Slovakia, and Bohemia. So it's really Spacek is how it's pronounced.
Oh,
but
really?
It was never pronounced that way in Northeast Texas.
Right.
So it became Spacek. So
they didn't want to get too challenging.
We're going with that.
Yeah. If there's no H in it with how it's written, we're not going to say the H.
And my mother's family was, they were all... Irish English, so I had, and you know, there were no cowboy boots,
no,
you know, no pickup trucks,
no, never,
no, we had, you know, German sausage, you know, it was very, very Czech. That the town where my father grew up, which was in Central Texas, everyone spoke Czech
and German probably too.
And German and spoke and drank long neck bottle beer.
Yeah, it's weird. Learning about how the Germans came to Texas. They brought the polka, and they brought the
their accordions.
Yes, the accordions.
But a love of the land, just a real love of the land.
Yeah,
and.
It's kind of beautiful.
It.
Yeah, there's still a lot of that. I think I imagine that some Texas barbecue is rooted back to the Germans.
Oh, yeah, and you know, homemade pickles.
Oh,
and
yeah,
relish, so, and it was.
They brought all
wonderful.
That. Yeah.
So I really was fortunate to have a very kind of ethnic. I got to experience that ethnicity that is running through my veins.
Yeah, and well, the Czech's very specific, and English Irish. That's pretty tough too.
You come
from tough genes.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, do you have relatives that are full on Irish and British and like or no?
My mother's family was like that. They were very. What did we've referred to them as? Threadbare gentility.
Oh, you know? Nice.
But they were. Lovely, genteel family
good
with
people.
A lot of love and,
oh, that's
and
nice.
Not much money.
Oh, well, that's
but
good.
But a lot of sense.
Oh, that's good. Decent people.
Good, classy people.
How many siblings do you have?
I grew up with two brothers.
Yeah. And are they not around anymore? Are they around?
I have one brother.
Who's around?
Who's around, yes. Yeah. The other passed away as a teenager.
So oh, my God. That's sad.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
He died of leukemia.
Oh, wow. And how old are you?
I was 18 and he was, or I was 17, almost 18. He was just turned 19.
That's like devastating.
Kind of devastating.
Yeah.
I had really fabulous parents, though, yeah. who were insistent that it become something positive in our lives, that we were able to
right.
do something with it. Otherwise, you just become paralyzed and,
yeah, and there's
you know,
a void
you can't
there.
Go on and
right.
bitter, and they didn't want that. So
they were tough people.
Yeah, they were tough people, and
really?
They were wise people. I don't
yeah.
know if they were so tough, but they were very resilient and
right.
wise. And
yeah. Religious?
Spiritual.
Okay.
Spiritual.
So, that's good. So there wasn't a big Christian rap on it.
Well, my mother was always our Sunday school teacher.
Right.
She just moved up with us because
yeah.
she didn't want us to be influenced by any fanatics.
So she actually had the job?
She had the job.
She taught
she
at
said,
the school?
I will bring the refreshments.
Uh-huh.
For,
oh, so
but I can't complain. I can't blame anything on anything bad on my parents.
Well,
they were just fabulous.
Yeah, but I mean, do you? Do you have things to hang on other people? You know,
like, oh yeah, particularly now.
Oh, looking back on it.
No, not back from then.
No,
but
no,
from
but
right here where we are.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
So like, so instead of like being morose, you guys just kind of processed it and moved on from your brother's death?
Well, for me, it was like rocket fuel. I realized that I had lived through that. And,
yeah.
You
were going to take life.
I could handle that.
Right.
And in my work, that was, you know, I had so much already. I'd lived so much and felt so deeply.
Yeah.
From such a young age.
It opened it up.
It opened it all up. I had a deep well of emotion to draw from.
Yeah, at a young age. But it was also like when you were becoming aware of the world. I mean, you weren't eight. I mean, you were 17. So like it processed
it
through.
It was through most of my teenage years.
That he was sick?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's heavy. So, and when did you decide to like that acting was the thing that was going to, you know, satisfy your creativity?
Music was the thing for me.
Originally.
Music was the thing that I always did.
Do you play guitar?
Played guitar, 12 string.
And, oh, nice.
And it would play for anybody that would listen.
And it was that time, too. I mean, it was sort of coming into the 60s with mm-hmm. the folk explosion.
Yeah.
So you had a lot of role models, I'd imagine. Who were your people?
Who are
when
my people?
I
loved people like Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young.
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah.
You know, all.
Yeah.
But I remember when I went to New York.
How
with
old were
two
you then?
Guitars. I was 16.
So
I was there before my brother died. I was there for a summer and then visiting some relatives and spent time there with them. They were in the theater. And so I got a glimpse of that. It
really?
Didn't make me want to act because I didn't know how.
But what was New York like then? So your folks are sort of like, you can go to New York. You wanted to go to New York and
yeah.
you spend time with these relatives. Who were they? What kind of theater were they involved in?
You know, Broadway theater,
oh, really?
Off-Broadway theater, yeah.
Were they producers or actors?
They were actors. Geraldine Page, Rip Torn.
They're your relatives?
Rip is my first cousin. His mother and my father were the Spaczek family.
And really?
Torn, Rip Torn, yeah.
How's he doing?
You know, I haven't talked to him in a long time. I hope he's out on his John boat fishing
yeah.
and having a great time.
Yeah, I saw him briefly at the Gary Shandling Memorial.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I don't know him.
That was a great show.
It was great. Yeah, he was quite a guy. But I didn't get to talk to Rip much. You know, he just kind of darted in,
yeah,
darted
paid
out.
Paid his respects.
But Geraldine Page and him were your relatives. And so that must have been a pretty lively trip to New York at 16.
Well, I didn't know anything. You know, I didn't even know enough to realize how brilliant
But they seem like exciting people.
Very exciting people. I think that's when I, you know, I just getting to stay with them and meet the people that they worked with and their friends. Yeah. It was just a whole, it opened up a whole new world. And
I
remember thinking, oh my gosh, I want to, I maybe someday I can join in that conversation.
Yeah.
It was a while though before.
Yeah. But it must have been mind-blowing.
It was mind-blowing. But I went there to do music. And so that
you had your guitars.
You know, I was on a path.
Did you go play? Did you get a, did you do a show when you were there?
I did Hootenanny Night.
Bottom Line or something?
At the Bitter End.
Oh, the Bitter End,
and
right.
And then what was the one that was right across the street?
The Café Wa?
The Café Wa, and I remember going down and seeing the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band was playing somewhere, but it was in the Village.
Right, they were and all down there, yeah.
I would go down there and take my guitar and sit with the guys playing Pinochle in Washington Square Park.
And you were 16, it must have been just sort of like, God, this is it.
And then I went back and I finished high school. My brother died, finished high school, and went to University of Texas.
For all 4 years?
No, I bailed after rush week. I went, okay, this is not for me. Like,
really? Right away?
Right away. Well, 1 week of rush will do it for you.
Were you being pressured to be in a sorority? And
I don't think I was being pressured, but I had already had, I already had my moccasins and my bell bottoms.
And you've been to New York.
And my guitar, I'd been to New York, and I just wanted that.
Yeah.
You know, that's
get out of Texas for a while.
Well, I loved Texas. Yeah. I always loved Texas because there was so much happening in music in Austin.
Sure.
It was
always
incredible.
Huh?
Who
were
it
your
was
favorite?
A very progressive.
Even then, there was a lot going on in Austin, like in terms of new
Guy
music.
Guy Clark, and you know, it was just a really great progressive music scene.
Yeah,
and so I loved that.
Were you writing songs?
I was writing songs, and
because you made one record like in the 80s, but like, did you was that?
No, I think it was much earlier.
Oh, it was?
Oh, in the 80s, yeah. After I did Coal Miner's Daughter, I did.
But you made a record when you were younger.
I did, and it was a really great experience for me because I wanted to be in the music business so bad, and I wrote songs, and I'd played in clubs.
Yeah.
And I met these record people who had a record, had a song.
Where was it already, in Texas?
It was in New York, 1619 Broadway, 1650 Broadway. It was the Brill Building.
The Brill Building, sure. Yeah.
You remember that?
Well, I know about it. You know, that's where it all happened, where all those R&B and early rock hits and Carole King.
Well, I met those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And they had this song, and it was produced. They did a beautiful job. It was called John, You've Been Too Far This Time. It was about his nude record album.
Uh-huh.
Why am I talking about this?
Yeah.
But they needed a girl, and in the door I walked. Okay, it's going to be you. I lost my identity. It wasn't my music. I sang.
Mm-hmm.
And it was after that that I thought, okay, I'm not changing my name. I'm doing my own thing.
Right.
And if I fail, I fail.
Yeah.
I'll fail on my own.
Yeah, not on someone else's sad project.
Well, they were very talented.
And they were just churning out hits. And they thought they had
But
one.
I met some really wonderful musicians there that then I went on to work with doing, just things to pay the rent.
Sure.
Like
Backup singing.
I sang on the Andy Warhol's Lonesome Cowboys film track.
You did?
His album, yeah. With the group, I was just, one of the group.
But you were, how old were you, like 19?
Yeah.
And
maybe
like
18.
18,
maybe
and 18. You sort of like somehow got dropped into that
group?
They
were thinking, what are you doing here?
He must have loved it. He's like, we got to...
I'd never met him till years later.
Oh, really?
But we did have they did come into the studio at one point and say, they need extras. So let's finish up this song and then go over to some bar uptown and
for a movie?
For that movie that we were doing the soundtrack
for. So you
Lonesome Cowboys. But we ended up on the cutting room floor.
Oh, really?
That was my first foray into film.
But did you go
I was a failure.
No, it had nothing to do with you. It didn't. I think you did fine, looking back. But did you go to the factory? Did you? Like, I imagine that that must have been a mind-blowing group of people to be around at 18 from Texas.
I never went to the factory, but I did go to Max's Kansas City occasionally.
Yeah?
Most times I was looking in the window.
But. Yeah, that must have been, it must have been a scene, man.
You know, all the important people ended up in the back room, which
right.
was sort of,
right.
you know.
I saw,
like,
I've seen
never,
pictures, right. Yeah. John Lennon, David Bowie,
yeah,
Lou
yeah,
Reed.
Yeah.
Everyone's hanging out.
The Rolling Stones. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But I wasn't in the back room.
No.
I was in the front room.
Like everybody else?
Or out on the street.
Watching the show?
That's
yeah.
right.
So when do you put down your guitar?
Well, I didn't put down my guitar. I just, you know, those doors weren't opening
right.
for me.
And you were at it for a few years, huh?
I was at it for a few years, but I was, you know, really didn't have a plan,
yeah.
it just wasn't happening.
Right.
But I kept on.
Yeah.
But everything that happened to me in the film industry, the film business, was really because of my music, because that would get me in the door.
Really?
And
from the beginning?
From the beginning. Well, maybe they thought I was funny. I don't know.
So you mean in auditioning, or how'd you first start acting outside of the showing up at a bar for Andy Warhol?
It was kind of purely accidental.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was a photographer who took photographs of me, took them to his modeling agency, who was also, they were also a theatrical agency,
uh-huh.
and I'm much too small to be a model. I went in with a whole book,
yeah.
portfolio yeah. of photographs.
Of you.
Of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but they said, oh, you know, we have a theatrical department, go over there. And that's where I met my first manager, who was really talented, Bill
yeah.
Tresh in
yeah.
New York. And he handled a lot of really wonderful actors. And
uh-huh.
he took me under his wing. And
did you train? Did you, what, I mean?
I went to the Strasberg Institute.
Was that where it was, were Geraldine well, and Rip involved with that?
They had been
yeah.
before. And you know, they were great. They didn't want to say do this or
yeah,
do that.
Right.
They just, you know, encouraged me to follow my instinct.
So you're at the Strasberg Institute. Was Lee alive? Who was?
Yes, he was. I went up in the elevator with him once.
Uh-huh.
Met him there, but
yeah.
I was never in one of his classes.
No? Who was your teacher?
His name was Ed Covins.
And you stayed there how long?
Oh, maybe a year.
Uh-huh. And this was like straight up method stuff, huh?
I guess so.
Yeah. You guess? You
That's all. Yeah. It was. I only got as far as sense memory, and then I never got
out?
To scene class. Then I was out.
But sense memory is, I guess, pretty important. That's sort of the nuts and bolts of it. I mean, if you can do that,
yeah,
you can figure out.
I'm a one-trick pony.
But the rest is just like knowing where your mark is and talking to somebody.
Exactly.
But if you can actually embody where you are, I think that's probably most of it.
Well, maybe.
So what happens? So then you get you move out here, or you get cast in something there?
I got cast in something there. And the irony was, though, that
yeah.
when I was cast in New York and came out to L.A.,
yeah.
they considered me a New York actress, which was really not true at all.
But that was
a
good thing?
It was a great thing.
It means you had integrity of some kind.
Yes,
yeah,
and
yeah.
you were, but it was all a lie.
Uh-huh.
It was all a lie. Texas actress who stopped in New York for a little while.
But, right, but did you tell him that? I hope not.
I didn't.
Of course not. Why would you? And you did, like, I went through the, you know, all the movies, but your first role was in Prime Cut?
Yes.
That movie scarred me.
Did it? You saw it?
When I was a kid. Like, it
oh
was,
my
it's
gosh.
Like, what is it, like 1970?
You never ate sausage again.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was sort of like, the one part I remember is when they sent the guy back and as sausages. Like, there's a scene in the opening of the movie where
we were both scarred.
I bet. Well, yeah, you played one of those women, right? The, like, where is it? Like, one of the women in the hay? In the stall?
Yeah, we were the women in the hay.
Oh, my God.
Women in the hay.
It was a weird movie.
It was a weird movie. It had a really wonderful director named Michael Ritchie.
Yeah.
Who went on to do The Candidate and Downhill Racer with Robert Redford.
The Candidate.
Really.
Yeah.
We wrote some songs together.
Me
and him. He and I.
Did you meet, what was the set like? Did you meet Hackman? Did you meet Marvin? Was it Lee and Marvin and Gene Hackman, right?
Yeah. They were great. Gene Hackman is a prince of a fellow.
You know,
just a really easygoing,
wonderful
guy.
Great actor.
And Lee was a great actor quite a character.
He said
to me once, I have blue eyes I have green eyes. Whenever they look blue, stay away from me.
Yeah, that's a good warning. What happens?
He was a interesting guy. I think there was a lot of, going on with the studio and you know, everybody working on that. Everybody but me. I was having a wonderful time. I thought it was just great. But
it's the first set, right?
But now I realize there was all kind of undercurrents.
Oh yeah, like bad behavior undercurrents.
Facing off, you know,
about that
power
movie?
Struggle.
Oh, right.
Between the studio and the
director. Oh really?
Director and actors.
That happens a lot, though. I guess. But back then it was a little more intimate. It seems that that's what I always find, because I've talked to who have I talked to that you know? Nolte was in here. It's kind of interesting talking to Nolte because it's all up there, but you don't know what's going to come out in what order. You know,
he's one of the greatest actors.
No kidding.
Ever.
Right? Well, the way he talks about acting in terms of he came to it in the 60s, but there was a period where he realized he needed to get good at it. And the way he kind of characterizes it, he stripped himself of his ego. Like he sat in a room and drank or did drugs or whatever the hell he did, but he just got rid of any idea he had of himself. And started there.
He would just write pages and pages and pages of research, of notes on his character. And then he also wrote notes on every character in each project he was working on.
No kidding. So he was in.
Yeah, he was in. He's totally devoted.
And you worked with him the first time on Heartbeat?
Yeah.
That movie doesn't get a lot of praise, but it was really the first, I think, attempt at characterizing the Beatniks, those guys. And you played Joan Cassidy. Was that it? Was that her name? Was it
Carolyn Cassidy?
Carolyn Cassidy, and Nick played your husband, Neil. That was a tough role.
And John Hurd played
Kerouac. That was wild. That must have been like
it was so wild. You have no idea.
I don't. Tell me.
I've been sworn to secrecy.
Come on. What, just the sense of getting into character, those particular characters?
Those guys, you never really knew what was going to happen.
On the set or in real life?
In real life.
Right.
Or on the set, because on the set is real life, Mark. Let's face it.
It is. It's set life. Yeah, it's happening right then. But yeah, I have to imagine with those two guys, it must have been pretty crazy.
Oh my gosh. Sometimes they would come straight to work from, a long night out.
Being up all
but
night.
But always, Nick was always on point.
Really?
And then I worked with him again
On Affliction?
On Affliction.
A lot of years later.
Oh, my God. He was just so brilliant.
And it's such a...
He's really one of the most brilliant actors. He's his entire being, he just becomes these...
And that was heavy.
Heavy.
That movie is
hard to watch. But wonderful.
Yeah. It's brutal, man. Schrader's a little brutal. Those scripts, I can't imagine looking at those scripts and being like, okay, here we go.
Let's go, yeah.
Yeah. So after Prime Cut, that's when it takes off, right? Then how did you get Badlands?
Well, after Prime Cut, I came to Los Angeles and we became very good friends, and her family had moved out to LA, and so I moved from New York and and stayed with them. And that's how I met Terrence Malick. And then that was a big break for me, huge, because it influenced my entire life. I don't know where I'd be now
without
that. It's where I met my husband, Jack Fisk, who was the production designer, and you know, and Terry, and it's when I began to understand that film is an art form.
Oh,
it's
I
not
bet.
Just
yeah.
that you're, you know, a celebrity, and
right?
Huge on the
screen. Well, Terry would be the guy. Terrence
he
Malick
was the
would
guy.
Be the- And how'd you, like, you did, was the meeting set up by your agents, or you just met him at a party, or how'd
no,
you
No, it was set up by my agents.
Uh-huh. And you guys just hit it off?
We just hit it off.
And I
think it's because he's from Texas.
He is, yeah.
And I'm from Texas, and he, you know, we connected on many different levels.
And, like, the process of shooting that movie with that guy, you know, with that vision, I mean, you know, how did it change your life in terms outside of career-wise, but just in terms of how you looked at the art of movies? Do you know?
Well, it changed everything.
Yeah.
I had never looked at film as art.
Yeah.
And that it just, it was a total and complete transformation for me, because I was working with all these wonderful artists, and I was a part of it. I had a seat at the table.
Right, yeah.
That was what I had always wanted, to be a part of this industry, or, you know, first it was music, but then it was a whole new awakening for me.
Film.
I thought of film in an entirely different way.
And acting as well?
And acting as well.
And, like, so
it
working with
everything.
Like, yeah, like working with Martin Sheen at that point.
Oh, my God, he was incredible.
Yeah.
And just, you know, he would do whatever you needed to do. If Cable needed to be rolled up, he rolled up Cable. And you know, I learned from the best.
Yeah.
I was very impressionable, and I got to work with these spectacular artists.
Now, he was pretty new, too, at that point, wasn't he, Martin?
He was. Actually, he'd done he was in his late 20s or early 30s. I'm not sure, but I remember we were meeting with all the young actors in Hollywood, and they were all fantastic. It was like such an amazing position to be in.
Yeah. Who was in that crew? Like De Niro and those guys?
Well, you know, I'm trying to think who all I met with. But it was not De Niro, because he was back in New York.
He's a New York guy. Yeah, that's right.
With Scorsese.
Yeah, doing the Mean Streets.
But I remember Terry saying, you know, there's this actor coming in. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
But I think he's too old. But I just, you know, he's a great actor, and we're going to meet with him. But, you know, it might not be right, because he's just too old for the role, I think.
Yeah.
Well, he walked in.
Yeah.
And he was the character. He just, I mean, he blew us away. He, you know, I'd been Holly Sargis, this character, for a month, working with everybody as I, you know, thinking I knew everything about the character. And when he walked in and played the scene with him, it was completely different.
Oh my God!
And it just was, you know, it was just one of those things. It was like a lightning strike.
So
he's incredible. He's an incredible actor and an incredible human being.
He seems like a very decent guy.
Unbelievable.
So from that, then the big ride begins. Then you get Carrie, right?
Yeah.
Right after that.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that come about? Well, how did you meet De Palma? Did he just?
You know, there was that during that time. There were all these young directors that were out here that knew each other. And they talked about the actors they were working with.
Right,
and
that crew.
That's kind of the way it was like a little club.
Yeah, smaller community, because they were the new guys. They were the guys
they
that
were
changed
the new guys.
Everything. Hal Ashby and Lucas and Spielberg and De Palma and, you know, that whole generation of dudes.
Yeah.
So they all knew each other, and they're like, you got to check her out.
Yeah.
And he brought you in.
Yeah, so that was a good place to be.
Yeah.
But there were, you know, it's interesting how he cast for that film.
Yeah, yeah.
he brought everybody in, and most everybody, you know, we'd all work together. We'd be in the same room. You'd be doing a scene with one character, and then you'd switch off, and we all exchanged parts.
Oh, really?
When we tested for it, I only found this out a few years ago. I had gotten a commercial for the same day of the screen test. Now, all the other actors were trying out for multiple roles.
Yeah.
And I was only trying out for Carrie, which kind of hurt my feelings a little bit. But I got a commercial for the very same day. And I had worked with Brian as a set decorator. Well, he thought I was the worst set decorator in the universe.
What, before Badlands?
Before Badlands, okay. On a film called... Oh, I forget what it was called.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Two films, actually, I worked with him on, because my husband was doing the production
design.
And you
guys were already together.
One was Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh, that was it. Yeah, yeah.
And we had an incident on set where Jack left, and that was before cell phones, and he said, like, just take care of the set. He'd lost his crew the first day.
Your husband.
My husband. The time, and so he was stuck with me and my cousin Sam. Who had long hair and wore a beaver top hat. And
70s.
Yeah, the 70s.
Yeah.
And he said, just watch the set. You don't have to do anything. It's all dressed. Everything's done.
Yeah.
I said, no problem. He wasn't gone 10 minutes when Brian said, okay, we're not going to do this scene. We're going to do another scene. Well, it wasn't that big a deal because we were using the same set. All we had to do was paint it and redress it.
Yeah.
And Brian is notoriously a poker face, and he was there watching while we went up in flames. I didn't realize then that you had to paint something. If you were going to repaint something a different color, you had to paint it white first.
Right. Prime it.
Prime it.
Yeah.
And then paint the other color.
Yeah.
So we didn't do that. We skipped a step, and the old color bled through, and what was supposed to be one color became magenta.
Uh-huh.
And it was a disaster, and Brian hated me.
did you remember that when you were up for Carrie?
Oh, yeah. He didn't forget a thing. But I went up. I called him. And I said, Brian, because I knew him. And I thought he was my friend, and he was.
Yeah.
He just didn't ever want to work with me as a set decorator again. Okay. Or in any way.
Oh, really?
So I said, I got this commercial tomorrow. What should I do? And he said, knowing he would say, oh, sissy, please, you got to come. Because he said, do the commercial.
Oh, my God.
And I'm not going to tell you what I said, but I stayed up all night and reread the book,
Carrie,
and put Vaseline in my hair the next day.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, didn't brush my teeth or wash my face. I was really disgusting.
Yeah.
And I went in and did the screen test and got the part.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, I thought was... Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I found out years later that the studio hadn't wanted me for that role. They wanted someone else, one of the other actresses that was trying out for Carrie.
Uh-huh.
And Brian was just being nice when he said, do the commercial, because he knew what I didn't know, that they didn't want me.
So he wasn't being an asshole. He was actually...
No, he was watching out for me. I would preferred him to tell me they didn't want me, and then I really would have worked harder.
Yeah, it sounded like you worked pretty hard.
Pretty hard.
Well, that's such a bizarre, just the distance between, like, Carrie and even, you know, the jump in terms of character from Badlands to Carrie, I can see that. Like, you know, these are kind of out there young girls in a way, but different. But like then from to that to Coal Miner's Daughter was like, that's an insane transformation. So when you do
you
Carrie,
think?
Yeah, a little bit. in terms of character, sure. But I mean, in terms of like doing Carrie, like as an actress, like how did you get there? How did you... Like, when was it putting the Vaseline in your hair? Was it?
I went to that place that all teenagers spend a lot of time, where you're the victim and everybody hates you, and you're locked in your room writing poetry and hating your mother.
Right.
So, you know, and I actually, a lot of things I learned from my husband, Jack. Uh-huh. He was doing the sets. He was designing
right.
it. And I noticed he had this whole pile of research of all the plates, all the Doré etchings of the Bible, which are these overly dramatic body positions and people, you know, rolling their eyes and right. being afraid the lion is coming to, you know, rip yeah. their arm off. And I studied those and would try to start and end scenes in those body positions and use, you know, it was that whole biblical thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hyperlore, her mother was such a,
right.
you know,
right.
religious fanatic.
Right.
And
so the terror of God.
The terror of God. So I kind of focused
on the physicality.
On that, the yeah. physicality and uh-huh. the isolation of it. The thing about Brian was he really knew, you know, he knew exactly what each shot was going to uh-huh. be. And if you could work within the confines of the shots that he had planned, he would let you try anything.
Uh-huh.
And it was a wonderful working experience for me. And of course, Piper Laurie, one of the greats.
Yeah.
One of the greats.
I get chills just thinking about that role.
Oh my God, you know, she's just this sweet, mild-mannered, darling woman. And then when she came on set, and, you know, there was something that just came from her solar plexus, this
yeah.
strength and power.
Yeah.
She was really a gift
yeah.
to that film.
Yeah, and now that, like, you say what you say, like, that expression that you had when, once the blood comes, that when they dump it on you and your eyes just kind of like it was complete, that was what was in your head, is that physicality of those paintings.
Doré etchings. Yeah. Wow. You have to look at them sometime. They're really,
I kind of remember, like, I get pictures in my head of something. I don't know them by
yeah.
name, but
yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, just that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's happened. Yeah. So you would never, like, I imagine, well, obviously, that Coal Miner's Daughter was the first time you were playing somebody who was alive and part of the process.
Exactly.
So, you know, you got to spend time, a lot of time, I imagine, with Loretta Lynn.
She was wonderful. I went on the road with her. I, you know, Doolittle pushed me out on the stage at the Grand Ole Opry just like he had her.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't quite ready to go on,
uh-huh.
but he decided I was.
Yeah.
And she really opened up to me about a lot, her life.
Yeah.
And we became very close. She cast me in the film.
She did. She
yeah.
chose you.
She chose me.
Who else was up for it?
As far as Loretta?
Yeah.
Oh, every actress in Hollywood,
yeah.
and there were scores that would have been great.
Yeah.
But she, you know, she'd never seen any of my work. It was just kind of one of those things. And so she wanted me to get to sing the songs.
And that's great, because you're like, I can do that.
I can do this. Yeah, but yeah. then when they said, okay, you can sing the songs, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. but you nailed it.
Well, thank you.
It's such a kind of interesting, like, the way that, who directed that? Michael Apted.
Who was an Englishman.
Yeah.
And he grew up in a coal mining area of England.
Yeah.
And he didn't bring along any country cliches.
Right.
You know, he was not aware of that.
He just brought the coal dust.
Yeah, just brought a pot of coal dust.
Yeah, and if you can feel it, every, like,
yeah.
all that stuff.
He was incredible. When he came aboard, it was just, everything started to fall into place. And
yeah.
of course, Tommy Lee was beyond
brilliant.
He's
a Texan too, isn't he?
He is.
What an actor that guy is. That
yeah.
must have been something.
Oh my God. He was just
an old Levon.
Incredible. And Levon. And you know, Levon had never acted. And he was astonishing.
He was great.
Did it. He just knew the character and
he lived it.
Yeah. And we played music.
Great drummer.
Oh my God. Great drummer.
The
great
best.
Man. God
yeah.
bless him.
Yeah. And he was in then he went on, I guess he did The Right Stuff. I don't know how much longer, further after that. I remember he played sort of Sam Shepard's sidekick. I've just been listening to some of that to the Dylan record, Planet Waves, which recently, man, it's like they were such a great band. He was such a great talented guy.
Yeah.
So you won an Oscar for that, and that like that must have been astounding and amazing. Could you believe it?
No, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. But, it, you know, it took a lot of people to win me that Oscar.
Oh, it did? Like,
Yeah, like Tommy Lee and Loretta and the writer, Tom Rickman, who just passed away recently. And, you know, it was Beverly D'Angelo. Good Lord.
Great, yeah.
Anybody better than her? No,
She's great.
Yeah,
yeah. Do you keep in touch with anybody?
I see Loretta? Michael Apted. I've worked with him. I stay in touch with Loretta. I haven't seen... Beverly in a long time, but I try to keep up with everybody's work. And
Tommy Lee,
I've seen him.
Yeah, it's so
see
amazing.
See him on the polo field.
Yeah, is he out there doing that?
Oh, he's out there doing that.
And when you win an Oscar, like that night, I mean, I can't like because like I romanticize the 70s Hollywood. That like I just feel like it was a smaller community that everybody kind of knew each other. It wasn't so much necessarily that they're rooting for everybody, but you kind of like you know you'd see Nicholson there, you'd see all the you know the actors and actresses that were working at the time, and you all kind of knew each other, right?
It wasn't horribly competitive then because I think everybody felt like you know we were all working and you got the parts that belonged to you and the ones that didn't went to whoever they belonged to. So. Yeah. But there was a real, you know, it was an exciting time. There was, I think, you know, there was Goldie Hawn and Diane Keaton and Sally Field and, you know, just Jessica Lange and Glenn Close. It just was jam-packed.
So working with your husband as a director, was that difficult on Raggedy Man? Did you like, you know?
It was great.
Oh, okay.
It was great. Although he said that whenever we looked at went to dailies, that if I didn't like something, I would scoot away from him.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And when and also like you get to work with these actors of another generation, and you work with another nomination for Missing with Jack Lemmon.
Oh my goodness!
That guy.
That
right?
guy.
Like, what is it about him? Like, he had a lot of range, but he was always sort of this solid kind of like he's, I don't, like, people speak of him so highly because he could do anything, right?
He could do anything. He'd be telling a joke to the crew.
Yeah.
And then they'd say, okay, we're rolling.
Yeah.
And he'd say, it's magic time. And then he'd do some, you know, intense scene where he'd be emotional, you know, it would be brilliant. And then then they'd say cut, and he'd finish the joke.
True.
And he gave me great advice. He said, you know, you're working too hard. You just, like, trust yourself.
That is something, isn't it?
Yeah, I took his advice.
Well, how were you, do you think you were working too hard because of how you thought you needed to do it?
I would, if I had a really heavy scene in the afternoon, I'd start in the morning thinking, okay, I gotta get myself there.
Beat yourself up.
I gotta beat myself up and get myself to that emotional place, and then you know think I could sustain it for hours, and then I'd be worn out
By the second take, or
he'd said you gotta trust yourself. It'll either happen or it won't.
Huh. So that's sort of like that moment that yeah, I don't know if it's true or not about Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman on the set of Marathon Man, where you know there's a scene where you know Dustin it has to be all sort of worn out and he's being tortured and he had stayed up for 3 days,
right?
And Olivier walks in with a cruller and his tea and he goes, Dustin, you should really try acting.
I know, but those Englishmen, you know, they're. English men and women, they're pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
You know, they think of it as a job, and they just go from one project to another. They don't wring their hands about what they should do next. They just work. And you can tell.
Yeah.
They just know what they're doing. They have experience. they're incredible with accents.
It's bizarre, right?
It's bizarre.
And it's not a method thing, really. It's like,
they hit their marks and do their lines and they just act.
It must come from Shakespeare or something, just from like coming up in that world. But then there are a couple of those English guys like Daniel Day-Lewis that just transcend everything.
Oh, well,
like,
Daniel
is
Day-Lewis isn't a, you know, he and Meryl are in a, on a planet of their own.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. Daniel Day-Lewis becomes, if he's going to play whatever he's going to play, he becomes that maybe a year.
It's crazy. Yeah,
a cobbler.
A cobbler, a butcher.
It's Abe Lincoln. But that's...
That's a hell of a commitment, right?
Yeah. But it's so...
Meryl doesn't do that, though, I don't think. And
no,
I think you're in the same league as Meryl Streep. You guys are great.
Thank you. Thank you. I take as a high compliment. I love her in every way.
Did you do films with her?
I've never done a film with her.
Oh.
But I've watched her in everything she's done.
It's kind of bizarre. It's kind of astounding, isn't it?
Yeah, she has there's something very luminous about her, and she just transforms herself. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's some of it must be innate. Like, I think a lot of actors, you know, the great ones, yourself included, you do have a certain, obviously there's a talent. You have a natural thing for it. I mean, a lot of, you know, being a great actor is that you just can do it. Because you can't learn that. Right?
You can learn stuff to help you.
Right.
I mean, she's so brilliant with accents. I've never seen anybody
that has a knack for
accents. And I don't know if it's a knack. It's just maybe she's just like works harder than the rest of us.
Right.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Meryl,
if
you're
us.
Listening,
I'd
we want
to
know how you do it.
I am actually doing a joke on stage about her, about seeing her. I was in Connecticut with my girlfriend, and she was in town doing something, I guess, but she was just sitting at a restaurant with her husband. And I noticed it was her, and she was just, the beat in the joke is like, she's just sitting there eating a piece of bread with some cheese on it. And I just got to be honest, it was just brilliant. I mean, really.
Nobody could eat cheese and a piece of bread like Meryl.
So natural, the craft.
Well, you know, the thing about her, she's just a real person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's plugged into humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's also very courageous. And when Donald Trump spoke ill of her, I think, you know, you can do a lot of things, but you don't talk about
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
You just don't. Yeah. She didn't take it. But, like, when you work on, like, this new movie, like, when you work with somebody like Redford at this point, like, you look at each other and just know what you've been through in terms of this business and like how long you've been around. Is there a camaraderie there that just happens naturally at this point?
You know, the director, David Lowery, he works with all of the same people. He has the same cinematographer that he's had since like 8 years
old.
And it's very much like working with Robert Altman. He has his crew and his cast are people that he's worked with. It was a little, I was a little nervous in the beginning because I was the only one that hadn't worked with David before. I was a first timer.
It's a hell of a crew on that movie. It was almost sad that, like, you know, most of your scenes, almost all of them were just with Robert because you got Waits and Glover and Affleck and the Denzel son. Like, there's this, like, that loaded up.
Yeah, loaded up.
Waits is like too much.
When I saw him, oh my God. And that's why I hate Christmas.
Exactly.
Did you see that part?
I did.
Oh my God. I only met him. I've been a huge fan of him for since the beginning of time. But I only met him as I was leaving the set and he was arriving one day.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah. And we had a nice chat.
Did you?
Yeah. What a cool guy.
He is. He's a great storyteller,
He's a great storyteller and seems to be a wonderful human being.
Yeah. And he's a great actor, really.
Great actor.
Do you remember that movie? Do you remember Ironweed with Nicholson? Yeah, Waits plays his buddy, and it was just like
I need to see that again. A lot of things like that
they get away from me. That happened to me with there's the gardener. That happened to me within the bedroom. I'm like, you know, I know I saw that. And then when I went and looked at it on Wiki, I'm like, oh my God, that movie was devastating.
Right. Things like that just become a part of our consciousness.
Oh my God. You and Wilkinson, like, what the? That was crazy.
Todd Field, a great director. These writer directors are really something.
Yeah. So when you saw that script, were you like, do you get excited about going to that place?
So excited.
Yeah.
So excited. It was, you know, I think we made that whole entire film, which included everything, everybody's salaries and everything for $1 million.
Uh-huh.
And it was just, I was sending my young daughters out to get set pieces.
Oh, really? Yeah. Go find us one of these.
Go to the dime store and get.
What was this other film? Like, didn't he? Like,
Little Children.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Ooh. Yeah, I just remember like the end of that, of In the Bedroom, that this sort of, after he goes and does the thing. And, you know, you don't know how you're really going to be with it, but then it was sort of like, okay, yeah.
Is it done?
Yeah. You want coffee?
Yeah. Oh, my God. That was a real, that's what an actor lives for, you know, projects like that, like Badlands and like Coal Miner's Daughter, and just those ones that you can. I love The Straight Story also. That's one of my favorite.
Oh, it's great. That was the David Lynch movie?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But it's really all, it's a director's medium for
right.
sure.
And, yeah.
You know, so it's, we're always prowling around looking for the next.
Yeah. The great director. Yeah. But well, they're the ones that afford you the space, and they're not overwritten, and you've really, there's a depth to the character, but it's not hammered out in, you know, like it's not overwrought. So you have this space to work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you ever do stage?
I never did stage. And really, it was a miracle I started making films.
Yeah.
You know, I just was in the right place at the right time, and I got to be that girl. It was that I was kind of. Every woman.
Do you miss doing like the what was the other big? Oh, look at me! I'm like now I'm that guy. It happens when I talk to people that have done so many movies. But the Crimes of the Heart film.
Oh yeah. Know,
working with a bunch of women, like there's not enough. Like I saw like Keaton Bergen and Steen Bergen were in that movie recently. The book club. But like you know, there's not a lot of movies like that. That must have been fun to do.
It was a blast. But you know, that was back in the day when everybody was saying, "Oh, they're gonna claw each other's eyeballs out."
Right.
You know, that's not the way women.
Yeah, who said that?
I don't know. Some weird person. Yeah. But we had a blast. We instead of having motorhomes, they rented the house next door to the location house and fixed that up. Dressing rooms for all of us, so we were all there
nice.
Together with our babies, and was just heaven. That was the best thing about that was getting to know Jessica and Diane and
I just met her. She's
Diane.
Like, yeah,
she's amazing.
Yeah, it was very
she's
quick.
She's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, she's like
she's our style maven.
Yeah, she's wearing platform combat boots.
God,
when I saw her.
She's so incredible.
And Sam Shepard.
Sam Shepard.
Powerful Sam Shepard.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. He's like, how is he? A nice guy?
Superbly nice. Fabulously nice. I knew him as a dear friend. Jack worked with him many times. I worked with him many times. And,
yeah. So you guys were social all the way through?
Yeah, and we lived near each other, and our children went to school together. So.
Oh, that's sweet. Well, I'm sorry he passed. That was sad.
Sad for humanity.
Really was, you know?
Time does go by fast.
Does
it?
You feel that?
Yeah.
When you talk
it's
about
weird.
It?
Weird. It's like now I'm always the oldest one on the set, and when people are treating you with a lot of respect on set, it usually means you're really old.
but also that you're great and you deserve to be there.
I think it's because you're really old.
But okay, but you know you've been able to sustain a pretty amazing career. You know what I mean? I mean that also is why you get respect. Is that not everybody lasts as long, and not everybody can continue working, and you seem to continue working and doing great stuff.
Well, there's a lot of stuff happening now in the business with TV the way it is.
Yeah.
There's so many more places to work.
And you mentioned Altman. Did you work with Altman?
Yeah.
On which one?
Number of times. Three Women.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And then I did a film that he produced called Welcome to L.A. That
Right, right. So was he kind of a maniac? Like, was he?
Oh, he was divine.
Yeah?
He was an innovator. He's the one that started, you know, everybody with a radio mic so you could talk at any time and overlap. That was revolutionary.
He's the one who did PAX, like, you know, a lavalier. Like, oh, that's how he did it. He was the first guy. That
he
makes
was the
sense.
First guy that I knew of that did that.
Because he loved that, like McCabe and Mrs. Miller,
exactly.
Like everybody's talking.
And it really gave it such a sense of reality. You gave me such a sense of being in reality when you were working.
And
he was great. But he was a little bit of a, you know, he was a real, he loved to play practical jokes on people. He was a really a prankster, you know, along the lines of Jack Kerouac and Neil Cassidy.
Oh, yeah? You never knew what was going to happen?
You never knew what was going to happen. And with, but it was always good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he may, I'm surprised I haven't seen that film. I just, I don't, like, I know a lot of his movies. I'm a huge fan, but I have not seen that one. I got to watch that one. Because that was like, it was, oh, 77. Was good. Good work. Good experience.
Good work. Good
Shelley
experience.
Duvall. She's a trip.
Shelley Duvall was fantastic.
Yeah.
And an actress named Janice Rule, who was had been a ballet dancer her entire career and then switched over into acting.
And what is this? I didn't get to watch the, I don't know if it's out yet, the thing you did with Julia Roberts. What is that?
It's called Homecoming, and I play Julia's mother, and she does, she and Shea Whigham and a young actor named Stephen James, who's incredible.
And it's
Bobby Cannavale. They do
Bobby.
You know, they do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, and it's a thriller.
Yes, yeah, psychological. It's really weird and wonderful. And Sam Esmail, who did who directed Mr. Robot?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Directed all 10 episodes, and he's. He's really amazing. It was a, it was a good group to work with.
And it's a series. It's going to be like
a half hour, drama, 10 episodes.
And
half
that's
hour.
It, or is it supposed to go on?
It's going to go on, I think, but it's an anthology like Castle Rock.
Okay.
So it'll be different people and different.
I get it. Yeah. And you just like to keep working.
You know, I really love it. It's I don't want to work for work's sake.
Right.
I just love having a project that I can focus on and a character that I could explore.
Yeah.
That's a really fun thing.
Are your kids grown up now?
My kids are grown up. Yeah, now they take care of me. No, Mom, that's not the way. The gate is over there.
And do you have horses?
We have one old horse, one foot in the grave, the other on a banana peel.
Yeah.
But we had, I think at one point we had about 60 horses that we were raising.
In Virginia.
In Virginia.
Is that where, do you live by Duval?
I live about 40 miles, 30 or 40 miles from him.
Uh-huh. Are you guys friends?
Well, we work together, and so, yeah, I haven't seen him in a really long time.
Which one did you do with him?
I did Get Low.
Duvall's another one of those people. He seems to lead a pretty private life, and when he shows up for work, he really up for work.
Yeah, he's like, really spectacular. And,
do you ever have that when you're acting with somebody where you're just sort of like, oh, look at him go, or look at her go?
You know, it's funny because I always love to watch actors and watch and kind of try to figure out their process.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's easier. Women will usually share their process.
Yeah.
With men, it's like, you know, they're protecting their favorite fishing hole.
Is that true? Yeah. So they're just going to mind their own business.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I guess like some people also are fairly competitive when they're acting. Like there's some people who you know, who really want to showboat. Like, you know, I don't know if
Well, that's
if
always good.
It is good, right?
Yeah.
I talked to Ethan Hawke about doing Training Day with Denzel, you know, because he's got to play. And he said he watched Denzel movies like he was watching football games from the other team. Like he was like, I'm not going to let this guy devour me.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Sometimes I would be I've worked with people before where you're in a scene and you just start watching them and you forget your lines and you can't, you know, you get so pulled in, drawn into what they're doing, that you completely blow it.
Yeah, and you got to be like, I'm going to need another take on that. Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you. I enjoyed the movie. It was a real honor to go through your life. And thanks for coming.
Is it over?
We don't have to. Where are you going now? What do you got? I thought you might have to go do another thing.
I think I do.
I think we covered a lot, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Good.
I thought, how are we going to fill up all that time? Then someone said to me, with Mark, it's easy.
Was it?
It was easy and fun.
Good. Thanks for talking to me, Sissy.
You're welcome.
That's it. That was me and Sissy Spacek. Again, The Old Man and the Gun with Robert Redford and Sissy Spacek in theaters now. Also look for Amazon's Homecoming. That premieres in November. What do I got to say here? What do I have to say here? What do I need to tell you now? I'm gonna play guitar with my wrong fingers again, and because it seems to have it adds a certain earnestness to it. And this fucking echo pedal, holy shit, man! Right, tone freaks. Boomer lives.